Chapter 77 "We've got a skimmer of blackguards back, High Lady," Samite reported as she strode into Karis's staterooms. There was none of the usual levity from the square-shouldered woman. "There are casualties." Karis broke off another damned negotiation of black powder with representatives of the Ilian pirate kings, now with a pirate queen added in for variety, and left immediately. In minutes they were in the infirmary. Chirurgeons and Luxiats bustled through a ward of gleaming white stone. The infirmary was ablaze with light all hours of the day and night. The sun's rays were believed to have healing properties. Because that meant it was substantially warmer than other floors of the prism's tower, it was held that the servants and Luxiats here were allowed shortened sleeves and hemlines because of the heat. The truth was grimmer, told in the runnels and gutters in the infirmary floor. Short sleeves and hems don't drag in blood. In its long history, the Chromeria had seen its share of war and pestilence. Karis composed herself as she walked. She wasn't the concerned friend or even a stern-faced commander here. She was Orholm's left hand on earth. As he looked unblinking on every horror and with mercy on every weakness, so must she appear caring but unmoved. She must be a pillar for others to lean on, never needy, never surprised, never weak. Iron. The rooms were surprisingly sedate. Karis hadn't been down here since the last training accident more than a month ago, when two teenage nunks ended up with scars across their faces from an explosive they'd created, with one blinded permanently. These days the infirmary was double-staffed, evidence of Carver Black's early preparations for the war, but it faced hardly more than the usual number of injuries, even as the war training of drafters had continued through the last year. Given the scarcity of other patients and their elevated status, the blackguards had been given their own room. Most of the injuries were minor, a burn that had seared Gil Grayling's sleeve to his bicep, a cut across Jin Holvar's back, an arrow stuck in Presser's buttock that would be funny someday if it didn't get infected. But for once there was no humour, no attempts at levity. Gavin Grayling lay on a table surrounded by his brothers and sisters. Not a one didn't have a hand on him. He was stripped to the waist, but Karis saw no wounds on the teenager. Karis came to stand by his head and put a hand on the dark, sweaty skin of his chest. She looked at his elder brother Gil, who winced as a chirurgeon ripped the fabric away from his own wound and pressed a bandage to it. The young man never moved his reassuring hand from his brother's arm, so what was Gavin's wound? With a groan, Gavin Grayling opened his eyes to see who had just touched him, and Karis knew. The sclera of his dark eyes were littered with the glowing blue fragments of his broken halos. "Ah, fuck," Karis said, forgetting everything she'd just prepared. It seemed to be the right thing to say, though. The blackguards nodded and grumbled, and Gavin Grayling smiled weakly at her. "Broken, huh?" he said. "They didn't want to tell me. I could feel it, though. Something wrong, something let loose in me. Shit." "Shit," Karis agreed. The cat was out of the bag now. What did it matter? These were her people. They would forgive her for remembering she'd been a blackguard first.
"Ambushed us," Gavin Grayling said. "We were looking for Pro Marcus."
"Of course you were," Karis said. "Orholm have mercy. They'd been looking for her husband, quietly." Officially, Androsgard had stopped sending out blackguards to look for Gavin. They were overworked already and didn't need their deaths hastened by drafting more. Other eyes and ears had taken on those duties, searching foreign capitals and rival houses for any whisper of him. The blackguards were professionals. They weren't supposed to have favourites. But they'd loved Gavin Guile. Quietly. They'd loved him. They would never give up on him. She had to hold back sudden tears. Gavin Grayling was only 18 years old. He'd been named after her husband. He'd lived to protect him. Now he was dying for him. She didn't ask if they'd found anything. Of course they hadn't. Asking would only drive home the waste of it. This young man was dying for nothing. But his intentions had been good, heroic even. War cared nothing. "You're entitled to have the Prism Elect perform your freeing," Karis said.
"Fuck him," Gavin said. "Damn, it feels kind of good to be able to say it free and clear. Sorry, Gil. Sorry, brothers, sisters. But fuck him. I know he's your son, High Mistress, but you've got a blind spot where he's standing. He's not a good man, High Lady. No one wants to say it to you. No one can tell you the truth. I can now. because you have to listen to a dying man, don't you? He did the freeing last year, and we were there. We've been at freeings, not me, but this brotherhood. We've been there with Gavin Gall every time he had to do the freeing. We saw how a good man approached that day. We saw him stealing his nerves. We saw his vomit in the chamber pot the morning of. We saw his steel spine all day. We saw his drunkenness the night after, and the endless baths, and the hands bloodied from him scrubbing them over and over. That's how a real man takes having to kill 70 or 100 or 200 friends. Your son did none of that.
Her heart caught in her throat. This was the blathering of a madman, the raving of the dying. But to cut him off would be a cruelty the blackguards would never forgive. She had to listen to his words no matter how vile.
Your son enjoyed killing 70 men and women. Enjoyed it. And don't you dare excuse him as a true believer who thought he was sending souls to a better place, to their just reward. He barely prayed the prayers his position demands. He giggled. He killed women before they'd finished their confessions. He stabbed them through the stomach first, or the loins. He did it for fun.
And her heart sank. And her heart died. Her son. Her son was inhuman. And she'd known it for long and long.
Perhaps you can't hear this. Perhaps telling you the truth will only gain your condemnation and his. But I live to serve you, Carys White Oak. Carys Guile, Carys White, my iron white.
And now tears spilled from those broken eyes.
I have adored you, always been in awe of you, and I've never known how to tell you that this shadow grows in your very house. I have nothing to gain from this, but Carys. He is poison. He may be the flesh of your flesh, but he is not the flesh of your spirit. He is nothing like you. You are so good and so worthy. Please, cut him off, cut him out, and don't let him near me. Hi, lady.
Enough, brother, Gil Grayling said, putting a hand on Gav's shoulder. We will tell her the truth of it all, I promise. But for now, enough. It was as if the jaws of her mind were being pulled open until the corners of her mouth tore open, and her throat were being stuffed with putrid meat faster than she could swallow.
Make it stop. Just make it stop. Are you ready?
Carys asked, cold as iron is cold.
I am,
he said. They helped him sit up and then stand. He looked at his compatriots, this boy of 18 summers. He whispered words in the ears of some, nodded to others. He acted with a gravitas far beyond his years. A few of the blackguards rushed from the room, unable to contain their weeping, though they were supposed to stand strong. Their weakness was forgiven. Moving slowly, a white must move slowly amid the blackguard, Gavin Grayling approached Carys last. He knelt. First he looked to his brother Gil.
I'm sorry, brother. You told me to take more care 100 times. I never listened.
I should.
It's not on you, Gav said.
He squeezed his brother's hand.
Brothers, sisters, I'm sorry to leave you before the final lap of the race.
Commander Fisk was weeping. He said,
One cannot give more than all. You have finished your race, Blackguard. You may put your burden down.
Permission for an extended absence, sir,
Gavin said. Commander Fisk cleared his throat twice, trying to find his words.
Permission granted, soldier.
He snapped to attention, and all the blackguards followed. The commander drew an ancient dagger from his belt, said to have been passed down from Carys Satyriel herself and the first blackguard. He spun it in his hand and presented it to Carys. Then he snapped back to attention with his blackguards. Some met Gav's eyes as he looked from face to face. Others couldn't bear it. Gil was shaking like a leaf, trying to keep his composure. The ward fell silent, even other patients hearing the hushed flap of immortals' wings.
I shall miss your jokes, Carys said. I shall miss your light and easy spirit.
Her own was as heavy as a millstone.
Let's not stretch this out longer than I can take, Gavin said.
He pulled the skin of his chest tight against his ribs to show the chinks between the bones. He stared at his brother's face and squeezed his hand hard.
Well done, good and faithful servant. Or Holland take you to your rest,
Carys said. Then she stabbed him in the heart, sliding the dagger home hard, and then pulled it out quickly. Gil held Gav's hand until the light went out of his eyes, and then lowered his brother's body onto the table and fell across him, weeping. Carys flared, all her ideas of dignity and position forgotten, until she found herself on a rear balcony in the shadow of the Cromeria, looking over the back bay where a bone-white ship was loading. She gripped the rail, unseeing. She'd always thought that heartbreak would arrive with tears and wailing, disconsolate flopping about and shutting oneself in one's bedchamber, not eating, not sleeping, looking gaunt and pale, like in the stories. For her, the sound of her heart cracking was simple and sharp, and accompanied by nothing other than silence. It came in one sentence, pitiless and plain, stilling all argument and complaint. So this is what my life is now. Gavin, are you out there somewhere? She would know if he were dead, wouldn't she? She would have a feeling, right? Why did he feel so close, after all this time? But that was only a stubborn, stupid denial. She couldn't afford to lie to herself any more. She couldn't let any more good kids die for her willful blindness. The third eye had told her, Orholm will repay you for the years the locusts have eaten. But God either didn't see, or didn't care, or didn't save. The husband she'd longed for was gone. The son she'd longed for was rotten. The stepson she should have kept, she'd driven away. God was a liar. Her fields were barren and sere, picked clean. Her story was over. Now she would merely survive. She would do her duty. That was all there was. This is my life now. Commander, she said, not turning.
Hi, lady.
Of course he had followed her. In all the ways that didn't matter, she was never alone. I know they were motivated by love, but there will be no more expeditions to search for my husband. I forbid them. He is gone. Let us live for the living, not die for the dead. She straightened her back and squared her shoulders, and with an iron heart, she finally did what she'd sworn she would never do. Note. Find Gavin. Scratch that. Below, the bone-white ship cast off from the quay. As the sun slowly rose, Caris watched it sail away until it disappeared into the horizon.